Chapter 18. Maria had taken longer than Frank to recover. Being in RMS for nearly a month had left her muscles rather weak, and it took all her effort just to get up and go to the bathroom without assistance. Nevertheless, it was several days before she was able to move slowly about the room. Proving to be capable assistants, Jack and Frank had gathered all manner of specimens during her convalescence. Everything from tissues and body fluids to samples of air, water, and even the foods that Jack and Frank had been eating. Each sample was carefully prepared according to Maria's exact instructions and run through the bio and genetic scanners in preparation for her perusal. Also, she could focus on figuring out why the Setian roots had made them better. The second question was almost as important. What had caused Jack to change? Maria was sure the two were connected. Still frail and almost always tired, Maria had fewer than 2 weeks to solve the riddle and send the all-clear signal to the Daedalus. Even though they tried to hide the fact from her, Maria could tell that Jack and Frank were both incredibly anxious. Besides, Jack had yet to master the art of hiding those thoughts he did not wish to convey to others. What bothered her most of all, and what she had hidden from both Frank and Jack, was how uneasy she felt around Jack. She had known him her entire life. She had even delivered both of his children, yet in his new form, she felt uncomfortable around him. No matter how much she tried to control her apprehension, it was always there, lingering in the back of her mind. Jack, of course, could easily sense this. As his newfound telepathic abilities became more refined, he discovered that he could pick up on the emotions of those around him. He couldn't actually read their thoughts, which seemed quite unfair, since they could easily read his, unless he was careful. And fear was the easiest emotion for him to detect. Jack was also starting to feel the presence of something he mentally referred to as signals. The phenomenon felt almost like a measure of energy or a pulsing heat in his head. He had explained the strange headaches in degrees of hot and cold to Frank, which had only earned him a confused stare. Jack knew that the signals manifested around living organisms, birds and animals, but he could still feel them from some distance away, coming into his mind like the sound of a room full of chattering people. All in all, it was unnerving and nearly impossible to ignore. On the plus side, this overload of signals only seemed to occur when he was outdoors, so staying inside the LRV for long periods of time was becoming easier. Instead of feeling confined, he welcomed the relative quiet within his own mind. But the chores he could perform inside were becoming fewer and fewer with each passing day. His ability to read was almost gone, even though his ability to understand the spoken word was still there. But even that was starting to fade. Whenever Frank or Maria would speak to him, he found that understanding them required far more concentration than before. Words and phrases were beginning to have little meaning. Instead, he found himself understanding the intent of the sounds they made with their voices, even if he didn't understand all the words they spoke. Surprisingly enough, they didn't seem to have any problem understanding him when he spoke to them with his mind. Frank seemed to be adapting well to Jack's new form. Frank could even finish Jack's thoughts on occasion, before Jack even knew what he was going to think. The day-to-day chores had taken a natural division between the three of them. Jack, being the most adept at hunting and gathering, spent most of his time outside, collecting specimens, hunting game for their meals, and gathering what few edible plants he could find on the mostly snow-covered ground. Frank, meanwhile, took care of maintenance inside and outside of the LRV, which was fully powered up once more. Of course, Maria lived in the med lab, with occasional trips out to Laura's genetics lab in one of the exterior huts to use some of the more specialized scanning equipment that enabled her to see right down to the very chemical bonds that held DNA strands together. When she was still bedridden, Maria had spent all of her time studying not only her own logs, but the logs of everyone else in the crew, paying particular attention to Laura's genetics research. Somewhere in those logs, there might be a clue that could point her in the right direction. She had even gotten access to Will's journal, despite Jack's objections, since he carried it with him at all times. If she wanted to find an answer to this puzzle, she would need every clue she could get her hands on. Maria had even spent endless hours interviewing Jack and Frank, repeatedly going over every detail of their adventures away from the camp and crew. It was frustrating, tedious work that often annoyed both Jack and Frank, having to repeat the same stories again and again. The constant fluid and tissue gathering from their own bodies had become a nuisance as well, but at least it was one they could both understand. Maria kept at it obsessively, hardly sleeping at night. Her own bioscan showed her to be recovering every bit as well as Frank, but she was always tired and stressed, due to the great amount of pressure she was under. There hadn't been much open discussion about anything between the three of them over the past few days. Jack, sensing Maria's fear of him, avoided her whenever possible. He occasionally had conversations, such as they were, with Frank. But between Frank's ability to finish Jack's thoughts and his usual overly enthusiastic optimism, Jack found their talks increasingly strained and difficult to tolerate, serving only to remind him of the disconnect that was slowly growing between himself and his friends. Their original 3 sit-down meals per day had quickly dwindled down to only 1 in the evening, as each of them had work to do that kept them busy during the day. But what had started out as a ritual to look forward to quickly became uncomfortable for Jack, who had little information to share with Frank and Maria. It was as if their points of view, their ways of seeing the universe that were previously identical to his own, had changed. It was like sitting down with people from another culture, another world, in fact. Frank and Maria's perceptions seemed so mistaken to Jack. It was as if they just didn't understand the world around them. Jack found himself wondering how they could be so naive. It all seemed so clear to him. What was worse was that this change had left Jack feeling like an outsider, a third wheel. He found himself making up excuses to finish quickly and depart, or to miss the evening meal altogether. Frank felt Jack's estrangement, and it troubled him greatly. Although he did his best to hide this from Jack, he suspected Jack already knew. Maria, on the other hand, seemed far more relaxed when Jack was not at the dinner table. She was also aware of Jack's separation, and she felt guilty for the way she felt when he was around. She tried to remember the old Jack, whom she admired and respected, the dedicated leader and family man who would make any sacrifice for those around him. But with each passing day, she felt that man slipping away forever. And although she would never say as much to Frank, unless she could find a way to reverse Jack's mutations, she feared that one day Jack would simply vanish from their presence and leave them for the wilderness beyond the ship.
"Too late to get some dinner?" Jenna asked as she stepped up to the serving station in the main mess hall. "I think I can rustle something up for you," the young cook answered.
Jenna was interning as Captain Ishkin's administrative assistant. At 22 years of age, she was the youngest person on the bridge. But to the cook, she was one of the few eligible women left on board. And besides, she was attractive, pleasant, and intelligent. Thus, the cook's intern would do all he could to put together a hot meal for her, even if most of his serving line was already torn down and stored away.
"Just give me a few minutes," he promised her. "I'll bring it out to you."
"Thanks," she sighed.
Jenna took a seat at the closest empty table. The mess hall was generally deserted this time of the evening, except for a few late diners still sitting around, drinking tea and chatting about the day's events. As it had been for several weeks, the topic of whispered conversations was about the Council's decision to forsake the Icarus crew and head for a safer destination. As to be expected, some agreed, while others found the decision reprehensible. These days, Jenna was thankful that her schedule usually put her at dinner at such a late hour. So many of her peers thought that she, being so close to the ship's captain, might have something to add to their conversations, and the incessant inquiries irritated her. She personally had no opinion on the fate of the Icarus. At least, that's what she told herself. Over the last 2 years,
One of the things she had learned was that those in command had to make tough decisions, and they never made them without careful consideration. She was happy just being an administrative assistant. It was not as exciting and glamorous as many of the other necessary professions on board, but there was no stress to it. At least, not until recently. "How's this?" the cook asked, as he set a tray down in front of her. Jenna looked the food over. It was the usual fare, a small cut of some meat grown in the genetics lab, a side of vegetable grown on the ag deck, and a minor serving of pasta. All perfectly balanced, nutritionally speaking, even if it was predictable. "What's this?" she asked, pointing to a small bowl of some sort of colorful salad that he had placed next to her plate. "It's a multi-bean salad." "Beans? Are they cooked?" she asked, as she poked at it with her fork. "Of course," he laughed. "It's a little experiment of mine. They had some extra in the last harvest, and I asked if I could try to come up with something new with them." "Is it safe?" she joked, as she scooped up a few beans. "No one's died yet, if that's what you mean." Jenna reluctantly took a bite, pleasantly surprised by the unusual flavor of the dressing. "Mmm, that's not bad. What's that dressing? I don't recognize the flavor." "Garlic and onion." "Yes, but there's something else in there." "Cilantro," the young cook boasted. "Cilantro? I've never heard of that." "I found it in some old cookbooks from Earth, in the ship's database. It was real popular in a lot of the trendy little soup and salad cafes back on Earth in the late 21st century." "Really? I didn't know they grew it on board." "They don't. They should, but they don't. You know how it is. Not enough space, only the usual produce and all that." Jenna could see the frustration in his face. "Makes it kind of tough to be creative, huh?" "Just a little." "Then where did you get it?" "I grew it myself," he bragged. "Under the heat lamps." The cook pointed at the serving counter to a small flat of plants sitting under the lamps at the far end. "Where did you get the seeds?" "I've got a buddy who works on the storage deck." "Can't you get in trouble for that?" "What are they going to do, toss me off the ship? The head chef is about to retire, and with us being so close to landing, nobody's interested in being a cook. They all want to be scientists, to do the important work." "Yeah, tell me about it." "How do you keep the lights burning all the time? I mean, that's got to cost a lot of power credits." "I've been spending a lot of time in the dark at home," he laughed, "so I could spend my own credits on the extra power." "Just to grow some herbs to make some salad?" "Hey, it beats turning out the same old slop day in and day out." "Did you know that there have only been 6 truly new recipes invented on board since Chef Scheller died? 6 in 35 years! Besides, I've got to get ready. Once we start growing a bigger variety of produce, I'm not going to be able to get away with churning out rabbit meat patties and pasta for very long." The young cook's laughter and enthusiasm were refreshing to Jenna, especially at the end of a long day. "Well, it's nice to know somebody is having fun at work." "What's the matter?" the young man asked as he sat down across the table from her. He had been hoping to strike up a conversation with her for some time.
"Rough day at the office?"
"Rough week. Ever since we changed course, everyone has been skulking around the flight deck like someone died."
"Yeah, well, a lot of people aren't happy with the council's decision."
"No, it's not that. It's something else. I don't know what. Everybody's being very hush-hush on the bridge, and the usual reports that I would have to summarize for the captain are bypassing me and being hand-delivered, usually by the ship's navigator or the XO himself. Now I don't get them until the end of the day, so I have to stay late to update the log entries. And even then, the captain has rewritten the reports. It doesn't make any sense."
"Do officers ever make any sense?" the cook joked, trying to offer a sympathetic ear.
It had taken him 6 weeks to grow that cilantro, and it was finally paying off. A few rows behind her, another late diner listened intently to their conversation. He found the last bit quite interesting, and he was sure that his own preceptor would find it intriguing as well. He listened for a few more minutes, until he was sure their conversation had turned away from matters of work, taking a more personal course, just as the young cook had hoped. The eavesdropping man stepped into the hallway outside of the mess hall and headed down the corridor as he looked at his watch.
The chief council member will still be awake, he thought, as he headed up the stairs toward the housing decks.
Frank!
Maria was obviously excited about something as she entered the wardroom where Frank was finishing his dinner.
What is it?
Maria looked around.
Where's Jack?
Outside, I guess. Why? What's up?
I think I've figured it out.
You found a cure?
Maria sat down.
No, but I think I've figured out how the virus affected us.
Great. How?
It was at the genetic level, right down at the very base of it, at the chemical bonds.
The what?
Maria slowed down, remembering that Frank was an engineer.
The chemical bonds, the ones that bond the proteins together in a DNA chain. It's so simple.
Well, if it's so simple, how come you didn't figure it out before?
Luckily, Maria was too excited to be offended.
You have to understand research protocols. You start at the top, or rather, the outside, and work your way in, level by level. Genetics is pretty far down the list.
Okay, start from the top.
Well, before we all went into RMS, I checked our symptomology against that of known diseases, but that was a bust. Everything it seemed like, it wasn't. Then I started looking at the individual systems to see if there was a similar pattern in their failures, but there wasn't.
Okay, jump ahead.
It was all gibberish to Frank.
Something, some chemical, actually it's more like an enzyme, it was causing the chemical bonds in our DNA to break down. Our DNA is our instruction set.
I'm not sure I'm following you, Doc,
Frank interrupted.
Engineer, remember?
Maria stopped, trying to rephrase her findings in a way Frank would understand.
Okay. Pretend you've got a busted piece of equipment that you can't repair. You have all the parts you need to build a new one, but something happened to the assembly instructions. All the words and sentences got scrambled, and you can't make sense out of them.
Then I wouldn't be able to build a new one.
Exactly.
Not only that, but the repair manual is scrambled as well, so now you couldn't even fix the old one, even if you wanted to.
Okay.
You see, the DNA holds the instructions for every living cell. It tells them what to do, how to act, and how to reproduce themselves. If their instructions are scrambled, they stop functioning, period. They can't even replace themselves.
Well, where did this enzyme come from?
I don't know. The air, the water? It was probably there in such tiny amounts that we couldn't even detect it, let alone filter it out. It probably built up in our bodies over the months until there was enough at the genetic level to do some damage.
Can you come up with a cure for it, though?
Probably. There has to be some chemical in the sweet root that either blocks or renders the enzyme inert. Hell, it's probably in the animals as well, or else they would have been affected just like us. All I have to do is figure out which chemical does the trick. And that shouldn't be too hard. I mean, there were only 4 substances in that sweet root that the scanner couldn't identify. All I have to do is to test all 4 of them on a live sample.
Huh, great! Nice work, Maria. Then we can send the all-clear message to the Daedalus?
Hold on, not so fast, Maria warned. It's way too soon to do that. We need to get some results first. We need to be sure...
Need I remind you, Doc, that we're up against time here?
Need I remind you that this thing nearly killed us all?
Good point, Frank conceded.
You keep working, I'll tell Jack.
You bet,
she exclaimed as she rose from the table to return to her work.
Hold on, Doc,
Frank stopped her. Take this with you, he instructed, holding up a plate of food.
You need to eat too, you know.
Thanks, she agreed, taking it with her to the med lab.
Hot damn, Frank thought,
as he too left the wardroom, on his way to break the good news to Jack.
Sir, I feel a little guilty spying on her like that.
The chief council member refilled his young intern's cup of tea as he spoke.
Of course you do, lad, but you didn't go there with the intention of spying on her, did you?
Of course not, sir. I was just finishing my evening meal. I didn't even know she would be there.
And they were making no effort to conceal their conversation from the ears of others?
No, sir. In fact, it was mere chance that I heard them at all. The other diners had only just left, and the mess hall was pretty quiet.
Then you did nothing wrong, my boy.
Then
Why does it feel wrong?
Growing up in a ship-bound culture such as ours, we are taught to respect what little privacy we have here. That's why you feel guilty, not for hearing their conversation to begin with, but rather for telling me about it.
So I shouldn't have told you?
No, you were right in doing so.
Even if I'm violating their privacy?
If someone would have overheard the right conversations and then reported them, such as you have this night, we might well have avoided the Luton incident altogether.
The young apprentice sipped at his tea as he considered the chief council member's words.
What will you do?
Talk to the right people, ask the right questions, all covertly at first. This close to our arrival, we have to be careful not to fracture what little unity we still have amongst our people. Our decision to abandon the crew of the Icarus has strained that unity enough already.
Then you won't ask for a formal inquiry?
Not just yet, I suspect.
The chief council member sipped at his own tea.
In matters such as these, he continued, looking directly in his intern's eyes, timing is everything.
Well, don't get all excited or anything, Frank quipped.
Sorry, Jack thought at him.
Good, yes, of course.
Jack's thoughts seemed broken somehow, disjointed. It required a bit of concentration for Frank to figure out what he was thinking.
I know it's not a cure yet, but come on, Jack.
Jack still didn't respond, and for the first time since he had returned, Frank couldn't read Jack's thoughts.
What's bothering you?
Difficult to communicate, more and more.
What do you mean?
Not understand you well. Not like before. Not easy. Harder. Each day. Harder.
You mean telepathically?
Jack nodded.
Shit.
Frank sat down on the ground next to Jack, looking up to see what it was Jack was always looking at whenever he was out here by himself.
What are you looking at?
Sky?
Duh.
Lifetime. Get here, only thought. Now, want back up there. Jack pointed toward the night sky.
I know what you mean.
Frank leaned back against the snowbank.
It's weird to think that I'll probably never be back up there. I'll probably spend the rest of my life here on this world. Hell, I'll probably die here.
We'll all probably die here, eventually.
Truth.
Listen, Jack, I know you're worried about what will become of you. I mean, who wouldn't be worried in your situation? But you can't give up hope yet. Maria will figure this thing out sooner or later, and once we get the rest of the crew revived, there will be seven of us working the problem.
No time. Soon I... No talk. No understand.
Maybe, but you'll still be here, with us, alive. We can take care of you, Jack.
Like pet?
Well, now who's being a smartass? Jack laughed as best he could, which was really more of a snort.
Captain, I think you might want to know about this.
What is it, Marco?
Someone has made an inquiry into the navigational logs.
A chill went up Halishkin's neck.
Who was it?
The Council. Marco watched the captain's face for any change of expression, but saw none.
Should I respond, sir?
It's public information, Marco. Not responding will just make it look like we're trying to hide something.
I'm confused, sir. I thought we were trying to hide something.
How much longer until we reach the go-no-go point?
About 36 hours, sir.
Well, I didn't really expect to be able to keep it a secret this long anyhow. Hal leaned back in his chair and sighed.
Send them the information they requested, Mr. DiTullio.
Maria, have you seen Jack?
Maria didn't look up from the scanner display.
No, but I've been in here all morning. I can't find him anywhere.
I'm sure he'll show up sooner or later.
I hope so,
Frank muttered, as he left the genetics hut. Maria paused to look up as he left, wondering why Frank seemed so concerned.
Captain Ishkin,
I suppose you are wondering why the Council has called you here today.
The thought has crossed my mind. Ray fought back a smirk. He and Hal both knew damned well why the Council had called this emergency meeting, and why they asked Hal to be present.
It has recently come to the attention of the Council that you have set the ship on a course that, let's say, is not entirely in accordance with our most recent directive. Is this true?
What directive would that be, sir? Hal asked innocently.
The directive to place this ship on course for whichever destination the Planetary Sciences Department chose. I assume you remember that directive?
Of course, sir, and I did just that.
What course did the ship's navigator recommend to satisfy that directive, Captain?
Well, he gave me several courses to choose from, sir, and I exercised my prerogative as the captain of this vessel to choose the course that best met our current requirements.
I see.
The chief council member looked down at his reports for a moment before continuing.
According to the reports from the navigator's log, two courses were made available to you. One that would put the ship on an intercept course with the orbit of Tau Ceti IV, correct?
Correct, sir.
And this course would allow us to attain orbit around Tau Ceti IV with minimum fuel expenditure, correct?
Yes, sir, it would.
The other course you had available to you would take us in between Tau Ceti IV and the star, would it not?
Yes, sir, it would.
Didn't you find such proximity to the star to be somewhat risky?
No, sir. The course was well within the safe operation protocols of this ship, sir.
I see. And you weren't concerned with the extra fuel it would cost us to slow down and let Tau Ceti IV catch up to us once we intercepted her orbit?
No, sir. The flight dynamics officer assured me that we would have enough fuel to sustain a safe parking orbit around TC-4 with either course.
Nevertheless, didn't the flight dynamics officer inform you that the first course would result in considerable fuel savings upon achieving orbit?
Yes, sir, he did.
Yet you chose the second course?
Ray was getting tired of this line of questioning. The Council obviously had access to all of the flight officer's logs and reports. They were just building a hanging platform for everyone in the room to see.
Yes, sir, I did.
Would you care to enlighten us as to the reason for your decision?
I felt it was the best course, sir.
And why would that be?
The second course provided us with the longest period of options, sir.
Options? For what?
To change our course, sir.
To what end?
In case we changed our destination, sir.
Again, I ask you, to what end?
Hal thought about his answer. If he told them the truth, they would probably remove him from command and hand the ship over to the XO. If he tried to lie, they would see through it, and the result would be the same.
Oh, well, once I park this thing, I'll be out of a job anyway. I chose the second course, Hal began confidently, because it would give us more time in case we received new information from our people on Tau Ceti V that might give this council reason to change their decision regarding not only the final destination of this vessel, but also in regards to the safe return of the crew of the Icarus, sir.
Ray watched as the expressions on several of the council members' faces suddenly turned sour. He knew they all understood what Hal had been trying to do, and secretly, they probably all applauded his efforts. But theirs was the final say, and it had to be respected at all costs. Hal had left them with little choice in the matter in the way he had gone about it. Ray suddenly felt guilty. After all, it had been his idea to begin with. As the murmuring amongst the council members died down, the chief council member spoke.
Captain Ishkin, please remain here while the council adjourns to chambers to consider this information and render a decision.
A decision on what?
Ray blurted out. The council members ignored Ray's remarks as they filed out of the meeting room to confer in private. Hal stepped back from the podium to sit down and wait.
Oh, Jesus, Hal. I'm real sorry I got you into this.
Don't worry, Ray. I knew what I was doing,
Besides, what are they going to do? Toss me overboard? He remarked, with a grin.
Jack sat alone, atop a small hill, away from the camp, writing as best he could on a data pad. Each word was a struggle to compose, each sentence like climbing a mountain. It had been nearly 2 weeks since Maria sent the message. Only days ago, she had succeeded in synthesizing a vaccine. As he wrote, she was already reviving Lynn, intending to test the vaccine on her first, since she was the least ill of the crew, still in RMS. Jack had spent most of his time away from the camp. He spent his days hunting food for the others, leaving his kill at the foot of the ramp for them. His ability to communicate continued to fade, and was now down to individual words only. He had been working on this letter for several days now, hoping to finish it before he lost all ability to communicate with his friends, whom he now referred to in his own mind as humans. Ray and Captain Ishkin watched as the council filed back into chambers, taking their seats behind the long metallic conference table.
"Here it comes," Hal whispered.
The lead council member adjusted himself in his seat as he spoke.
"Captain Ishkin, would you please approach the podium?"
His voice was flat and without emotion. He paused for a moment, waiting for the captain to take his place at the podium before continuing. Hal despised the formalities, as necessary as he knew they were. He stood proud, ready to face his judgment.
"Captain Ishkin, it is the decision of this council that, while you did not actually violate the instructions of this council, you did violate the intent of those instructions. We have reviewed the pertinent information, and while you did not directly jeopardize the safety of this ship and her population, you did limit any future options we may have had by your decision to choose the second course option without any solid evidence that it was an appropriate choice. While we certainly understand that such a decision is your prerogative as the commander of this ship, you must also understand that it is our responsibility to speak for the general population, and to ensure the safety of the population, as well as the completion of our mission."
Ray wanted to speak, to voice his protest, but he had done enough already.
"Unfortunately, you have left this council in a bit of a predicament, as we see no way to adequately punish you for your misdeeds. Given our ETA to arrival, criminal prosecution and punishment would not be prudent. Besides, I'm not entirely sure that criminal charges would be warranted. Furthermore, we will need every able body once we reach our destination to ensure our survival, especially someone with your training and experience. We do, however, feel compelled to pass down some sort of punishment, if for no other reason than to set an example to the others. It has therefore been decided that you will be relieved of command and restricted to quarters pending further assignment. On adjournment of this meeting, you will proceed directly to the bridge and relinquish command to your executive officer."
Ray could not contain his anger.
"Oh, this is bullshit!" he yelled.
"Mr. Wilkins, you will control yourself or you will be removed."
Threats had never stopped Ray.
"We're only months away from the most critical maneuver of our entire mission, and you want to relieve the most experienced man for the job? Mr. Wilkins!"
"Ray, please," Hal urged him. On the bridge of the Daedalus, the communications officer listened intently to the words coming through his headset as he reached for the intercom.
"Sir?"
"Yes?"
the Exo's voice answered.
"Radio astronomy reports an incoming message, sir, over the Doppler system."
The executive officer burst through the hatch from the ready room onto the bridge and was at the comm officer's side before he had finished his sentence.
"Is it a repeat?"
"No, sir. It's a new message. It's coming through now, sir,"
the communications officer told him, pointing to the display in front of him. The XO watched as the message printed out across the screen, holding his enthusiasm in until the message was complete. A few seconds later, the last words printed across the screen, followed by the phrase he was looking for, all in capital letters, "Message confirmed."
"Alert the captain!"
the XO exclaimed, as he slapped the comm officer on the back, nearly knocking him off of his seat.
"Sir, the captain is still in the council chambers."
"I don't care if he's talking to God himself. Call him! And alert engineering to warm up the engines!"
The XO turned to face the bridge, finding that everyone was looking at him with smiles on their faces.
"Helm, prepare to change course. Navigator, plot a course for Tau Ceti V."
"Are you kidding?"
the ship's navigator laughed.
"I've been replotting that course every hour for the last few days."
"So," the lead council member concluded, "if there is no further business, we shall adjourn."
Suddenly, a soft beep came from the intercom speaker on the back bulkhead, followed by a shrill hailing whistle.
"Captain to the bridge,"
the speaker announced excitedly. Hal looked to the lead council member for permission to answer the hail. The lead council member begrudgingly nodded his approval, if only to appear compassionate in front of the others.
"Put it on speaker, please,"
Hal instructed the system operator, sitting at the small control terminal at the end of the conference table. The speaker beeped again, indicating the comm circuit was open.
"Ishkin here. What is it?"
It was the XO's voice this time.
"Message from the Icarus, Captain. Message reads, all clear. Situation resolved. Vaccine developed. Safe to approach. Tau Ceti V is safe for colonization. End of message."
"Is the message confirmed?"
Hal asked, being very careful to follow strict procedure in front of the council.
"Message is confirmed, sir."
"And is it signed?"
"Yes, sir. It's signed by Dr. Gonzalez, sir. Her authorization code is confirmed as well, Captain."
There was silence throughout the room. Ray was grinning from ear to ear. The lead council member was not.
"Your orders, sir?"
the XO inquired.
"Mute, please,"
the lead council member ordered the systems operator, who immediately complied, trying to hide her own smile. The lead council member leaned to his left, conferring with the other members of the council. The mumbling went on for several seconds. To Ray, it seemed an eternity had passed before the lead council member straightened up to speak.
"Captain,"
he stated, trying to hide his own disappointment,
"in light of recent developments, the council has decided to reconsider its position pending further investigation. You may continue your duties as captain. For now."
He slammed the gavel down hard.
"Meeting adjourned."
As he rose to exit, he turned back toward Hal for a moment.
"Captain, I believe your executive officer is waiting for orders."
Hal's stone-cold expression faded into a beaming smile as he signaled the systems operator to unmute the intercom.
"XO, how much time until we reach the optimum course change point?"
28 minutes, sir."
"Notify engineering to..."
"Already done, sir."
"Alert the ship. Prepare for maneuvering. Course change as soon as the population is secure. I'm on my way."
"Aye, aye, sir."
Hal turned to step away from the podium as the intercom clicked off.
"Congratulations, my boy!"
Ray shouted as he struggled to rise from his seat. Suddenly, the public address system sounded all over the ship.
"Attention, all hands. Prepare for maneuvering. General population. Set condition, blue. Return to quarters and secure. We are changing course for Tau Ceti V in 27 minutes.
Cheers erupted in the hallway as the news was broadcast throughout the ship. They all knew what it meant. The crew of the Icarus was alive and well, and their new home was waiting for them.
"You better get moving, old-timer," Hal teased over the commotion. "I don't want to have to wait for you to get those tired old bones back to your cabin and get secured before I can start turning this barge."
Ray smiled, patting Hal on the cheek.
"You kids have no respect for your elders."
Frank watched as Maria scurried around the med lab. It had been nearly 4 hours since she started to slowly bring Lynn out of RMS. It would be several hours more before she would regain consciousness. Jack also watched, from the hatchway, having managed to overcome the nearly overwhelming feeling of confinement to return to the LRV at least one more time. "How's she doing?" Frank asked, having only returned a few minutes ago.
"She's coming along nicely. She should be regaining consciousness in a few hours.
Then I can give her the antidote.
Jack watched Frank. He was looking better than ever, now that he had completely recovered. Even Maria, as overworked as she was, looked to be the picture of health once more. But to Jack, they also appeared more human than ever before, and thus more alien. But soon it would be him who was the alien, and he knew it. He reached down for his backpack on the floor near the bulkhead just outside the med lab, pulling out his data pad. He turned it on, hoping to scan the words, to proofread them one last time, but by now he could no longer discern their meaning. If it hadn't been for the grammar and spelling correction software built into the data pad, he doubted his thoughts would have been understandable to Frank and Maria. Summoning all his resolve, he forced himself to step into the even tighter confines of the med lab one last time, before it was too late. Frank was the first to notice Jack's entry into the compartment, as well as his sorrowful face. His first instinct was to ask Jack what was wrong, but he doubted that Jack would understand him. Jack stepped up to Frank and handed him the data pad, gesturing as best he could in his now alien body language for him to read it. Maria turned, sensing Jack's presence in the room. She saw Jack hand Frank the data pad as he slung his pack onto his shoulder, as if to depart. Something was not right. She felt it, the same as Frank.
"What is it, Frank?" she asked.
"It's a letter from Jack here."
"How did he manage to write it?"
"It must have been hard."
"What does it say?"
Neither of them had heard a single thought from Jack in nearly a week. Frank scanned the letter briefly, trying not to let his emotions get in the way as they suddenly surged up from inside him. Finally, he began to read. "My friends, I must go. No surprise. New to come. I not belong now. No tell them about me. I died long ago, like Will. They must never know truth. Panic, fear, disagreement. This world only home now for all you. No choice. Best for all. This my last order."
"Jack,"
Maria begged, wiping the tears from her eyes. "There's more," Frank warned, his eyes welling up. "No worry me. I good. I know what you never know. Nature, this world, we are one. I belong out there, in trees, in rivers, in mountains. I to miss you all. But I be happy. No cry for me. Please, no cry." Frank turned his gaze away from the data pad, handing it to Maria.
"The next part is for you," he whispered.
Maria took the tablet into her trembling hands and began to read.
"Maria, care for crew. Make well. Keep human. Protect colonists. Protect my children. Love yours. No cry for me. I good."
Maria handed the data pad back to Frank as she tried to hold back the tears. Frank read the message intended for him.
"Frank, always my friend. Always. Protect my family. Tell I love. Someday, when right, tell truth about me. In your birth is journal, Will journal. At right time, give to Will's son. Tell him truth. Will die brave. Save my life many. Good man, brave man, honest man. My friend."
Frank looked up from the data pad at Jack.
"I will, Jack. I promise."
He wiped the tears from his own eyes and finished reading.
"No one can know of me. Not now. You have new world. Build good. Build strong. Be ready. Someday, Earth come. You know I not stay. I not belong. I not human. Jack, please, Frank pleaded.
Jack grunted, pointing at the data pad, indicating for Frank to finish.
Out there, happy. In here, not happy. Out there, belong. In here, not belong. Out there, understand all. In here, understand nothing. In here, freak, pet. Specimen. Out there, free. I still around, always hiding, always watching. You will know. I remember all. Always. Not forget me. Love, Jack.
Silence fell on the compartment, broken only by the sound of Maria's sniffles as she stepped forward and put her arms around Jack, burying her face in his furry shoulder, ignoring the alien stench of his bluish-gray fur as she whispered something in his ear that he would probably not understand.
I won't forget you, Jack. I promise.
After a long moment, she finally let go, retreating several steps back, until she was leaning once again against the exam table, where Lynn lay unconscious. Frank was frozen, afraid to speak, afraid he would break down and cry like a baby. Jack turned to look at him as he struggled to try to remember his own humanity, or what little was left of it. Then, instinctively, he remembered something that seemed appropriate at the moment. Jack held out his big, leathery hand, extending it to Frank. Frank looked into his friend's eyes. Despite his grotesquely alien appearance, his eyes had not changed. Still blue, still honest, still Jack. Frank took Jack's hand, grasping it firmly, as he stepped forward and took Jack in his free arm to hug him. Almost as quickly as it had happened, it ended, and Jack turned to exit. Frank followed him out, if only to be with him a moment longer. He watched as Jack slung the heavily loaded pack over his broad alien shoulders with ease. Jack took a deep breath of the cold evening air. Winter was almost over now. He looked around the area. Most of the snow had melted away, leaving a fresh, bright, blue-green layer of plant life exposed to soak up the setting sun. Jack wondered for a moment if the foliage had always been the same color, or if it, too, had been resequenced from something other than what it originally had been. It was one of many questions he hoped to answer in the years to come. And his answer would be found somewhere out there, in the wilderness of his new home. Jack turned to look at Frank one last time, face to face, meeting his eyes. Although he planned to check on them from time to time, this would probably be the last time they actually made eye contact. Frank understood the significance of the look Jack was now giving him. Be safe, Jack. Jack heard only strange grunts and vocalizations. They all sounded familiar, but were incomprehensible nonetheless. But he understood the sentiment. Jack reached out and slapped Frank on the shoulder one last time, just as he had when they were young, then turned and walked away. Frank stood there as Jack walked away, watching until he disappeared from sight. As Jack moved across the open meadows and rolling hills that would soon become the first human extrasolar colony on an Earth-like world, his despair seemed to fade away. Birds chirped from the distant treetops. Animals grunted from distances too far away for any human to hear. Smells, many and varied, wafted through his nostrils, alerting him to the presence of all sorts of creatures, large and small. A late winter breeze tossed his long, blue-gray hair. Everything was right for him out here. Jack was finally home.